You are listening to Radio Aryan.
Welcome to Aryan Britannia. Today's date is Monday, the 11th of March, 2019, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioaryan.com. Well, I'm very pleased to say my co-host is back with me today, Max Musson from Western Spring. Max, how are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm doing very well, actually. I've had an enjoyable weekend so far, and the sun is coming out now, so we're enjoying some sunny weather to finish off the day after it being a bit sort of wet and windy earlier on.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I was looking at the weather and it said that there was snow in Scotland and elsewhere in Britain, and it's still sunny here as well. It's still springtime here in Wales. We've got an exciting week ahead of us, I think, this week as well, particularly with Brexit. And we're not going to talk all about Brexit, but we will begin with Brexit today. We've also got some news on Muslim terrorists and immigration, and also Diane Abbott's sexual fantasies, which we're going to get into later on. But we're going to begin with a little bit about Brexit, because apparently this week we get another meaningful vote. They're going to try that one again on the changes that Theresa May has made to her deal. It's still going to fail. But the difference this time is that when it does fail, she's then going to give a vote to Parliament on whether to take the no-deal Brexit off the table and whether to extend Article 50, which is treason, basically, because all the politicians signed it into law that if they couldn't get a deal, they would all vote for the no-deal Brexit. And the no-deal Brexit is exactly what the public want. There was the Daily Telegraph took a poll just before we went to air, and 44% of the public said that they want to leave with no deal, and only 30% said that they wanted to make a deal. So the majority of the people are still saying exactly the same as they were when we voted to leave, and the Parliament, the government, are still trying to do a deal. We rejected a deal. We rejected David Cameron's deal and said, we don't want to do a deal. We want to leave the EU. And they're still doing everything they can to throw a spanner in the works and prevent that from happening. So it's going to be an exciting week, because it really is the government going directly against the will of the people. The Labour Party think they've got the will of the people behind them calling for another referendum. They haven't. I mean, this poll just proves it. The majority of the people in Britain want to leave with no deal at all. They don't even want to leave with Theresa May's sort of half in, half out. They just want to make a clean break and leave. And that's gone up by 15% from a couple of weeks back when they took the last poll. Now, I know you've got some other news about Brexit to talk about here as well, Max. Something about a new group forming?
No, really what I wanted to say was that I'm not necessarily, I don't necessarily think that the majority of people want us to leave with no deal. I think what they want us to do is to actually leave the European Union. And if that means with no deal, then so be it. I think that the majority of people would prefer to have some kind of properly negotiated exit from the European Union. But the European Union obviously don't really want to offer us a properly negotiated exit, unless it's on the terms that they're dictating, in which case we end up in a sort of a Brexit in name only kind of situation, where we have to follow directions or follow any laws or whatever are actually sort of dictated to us by the European Parliament. And this is the situation that we're in. And I think that the news from this weekend was mainly that I think our chief negotiator at the moment with the discussing the terms of our exit with Michel Barnier is a chap called Geoffrey Cox, QC, who seems like a chap who's doing his best. But it would seem from what's taken place in recent times that effectively he's been left with no leverage whatsoever. You know, his one big bargaining counter, and the one big bargaining counter that the British government have had all along, is the threat of a no-deal Brexit, or, you know, us leaving on World Trade Organization terms, to put it more positively. You know, that has been the only bargaining chip that we've had in the negotiations. And with all the Remainers have all done their best to hamper our government's ability to negotiate on our behalf. And at every step and turn along the way, they've tried to intervene in such a way that if the government failed to negotiate a good deal with the European Union, that we end up settling for an even worse Brexit in name only kind of deal, instead of us following through with what Theresa May originally said, was that a no deal is better than a bad deal. And, you know, they've been successful in changing the government's mind, so that more and more the intention of our government seems to be that any deal is better than no deal. And and one of the key things that they've done is to move to remove the possibility of a no deal Brexit from the table. And what we had in recent times is three ministers from the cabinet have all moved to have the no-deal Brexit removed from the table, and they are Amber Rudd, Greg Clark and David Gawke, and they've pushed to have this, to have the no-deal option removed from the table. And where that's removed from the table, it effectively leaves Geoffrey Cox QC with nothing to bargain with. All he can do is go to the European Union and say, you know, please, 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 will you help us? And there's no sanction that can be applied to the European Union if they decide to just laugh in our face, which is in effect what they're doing. And so we're now in a situation where we've got a number of key votes coming up. There's one that's going to be on the 12th of March, which is going to be where, again, Theresa May is going to present her current deal, which is sort of a Brexit in name only kind of deal. And if the MPs vote in favour of that, then it looks as if that is going to be the deal, and we'll leave the European Union on the 29th of March under those terms. If MPs vote that down, which seems quite likely, because the Brexiteers within Parliament seem to be determined to vote that one down, then there'll be a further vote on the 13th of March, where MPs will vote on whether we leave the European Union without a deal. And it's likely that the majority of MPs are going to vote that we don't leave without a deal. But if we do, if they do vote that we leave without a deal, then we could leave on the 29th of March with no deal. And then, but if they vote no, that we can't leave with no deal, then on the 14th of March, there's then going to be another vote by MPs in Parliament on whether or not we ask for an extension of Article 50. If we ask for an extension of Article 50, then it goes through a number of other sort of negotiation stages where we've got to go to the European Union and ask them if they will allow us to extend. But so this quagmire extends out in front of us, where there is no certainty or no where nobody can really draw any kind of comfort from the prospects in front of us, because the situation could go any way. And it's I pity the poor bookmakers, really, because if anybody's placing bets on this, it could go either one way or the other in the extreme, in which one extreme end we could end up being stuck in the European Union and end up staying in, or we could have a no deal Brexit that's a Brexit in name only, or we could have a proper Brexit, a properly negotiated exit, or we could have a completely no deal Brexit where we just leave with no negotiated deal whatsoever. So there is all that wide expanse of possibilities. And the saddest thing, really, because I speak to lots of people, and almost all of them are, you know, very consciously aware of the fact that there was a major blunder on the part of the government when the referendum took place, that Theresa May, when she became Prime Minister, she should have just taken us out of the European Union on a no-deal basis as soon as she possibly could, you know, perhaps within 3 months of the referendum, and then left it to the European Union to come to us with any more preferential trade terms that they want to offer. And that would have created a situation where the onus was on them, the ball was in their court, and my belief is that the European Union would have fallen over themselves in order to come to us and offer us something that we could have had then. But in view, because we've gone through the process that we've had this long, protracted 2.5 years or so, where there's been 2.5 years of uncertainty, and the pain that has been caused to industry and commerce in this country has largely been the result of that uncertainty. And this is the thing that the public want to end. We just want to end this uncertainty, because the uncertainty makes it very difficult for people that are in business to plan. It makes it very difficult for anybody who's reached any one of these sort of like big life stages, where they're having to make a decision about their financial arrangements for the future. But it's very difficult for them to plan because they just really don't know what the future holds. And depending upon which way the votes go over the next few days, it could have quite an extensive impact on individual people's personal financial arrangements. And so we just need to get through this next few days to and hopefully get the uncertainty over and done with. And you know, my belief is, my hope is that the European Union will back down at the end of the day, and so that there can be some kind of decent, negotiated, proper exit from the European Union. But failing that, I think that we ought to leave without a deal. And I just hope that we don't end up being stuck with some kind of really naff Brexit in name only, or end up, you know, heaven forbid, being stuck in the European Union and not actually ever leaving.
Yeah, it's this uncertainty, isn't it? People just are just saying, get it over and done with. Just do it. Do it, and then we can sort everything out after that. Because the uncertainty, as you say, it's really hurting business. It's really hurting industry. I think it's been deliberately done as well. They're just trying to punish us. And just as a last little bit to this, Theresa May is now seems to be offering somewhat of a bribe. They seem to be saying that if people accept her deal, then she's willing to step down in April. That's the latest whisper today on the grapevine, is that she's offering to actually step down. So we'll just have to see.
The other bribe as well is that she's offering to spend 20, is it million or billion? I can't remember now, but a fairly substantial amount of money anyway. She's offering to spend to revitalise the poorest parts of Britain. Well, if the government's had that money, and the government's got that money, why haven't they spent it anyway? You know, it's strange, isn't it, that they can rustle up money for a bribe, but they don't actually have the money there just to donate, or just to invest in the British people ordinarily.
Well, we'd have £40 billion to spend on doing whatever we wanted if we had the no-deal Brexit, on making preparations to cushion the areas that were going to find it hard. £40 billion, that's a hell of a lot of money that we'd be saving just by leaving. And as you say, then it would be the EU that was coming to us trying to make deals with us because of all the trade that we do with them. And don't forget, we've got one of the world's centres, financial centres in Britain, the City of London. With all the negative things we say about the City of London, it is still one of three of the biggest financial centres, hubs in the world. So there's no way that it can fail with Britain being apart from the EU. It's all a huge scam that the government are pulling. Everybody is just sick of it and just wants to get out. And, we're not going to talk too much about this anyway. So we'll just have to see what happens this week, because we probably will be covering it more in depth next week. But another major news story that's been in the news is still this Jemima Begum story, because her child apparently died in the refugee camps, and they've made that mainstream news. I mean, how many children die in the refugee camps every day? The woman is not a British citizen. She's nothing to do with us. She went off to join Muslim terrorists. The child has nothing to do with us. The child was born on Syrian soil. It's Syrian, And yet the BBC seem to think that this is what we want to be hearing about. It's not what the public want to be hearing about. There's another news story that they've conveniently ignored that I think is what the public want to hear about. And that is about a Muslim terrorist last year, a child terrorist that injured 51 people, set off a nail bomb on a train. And he was handed over to white foster parents to look after, kindly white people that want to help children. This monster was handed over to them. And the authorities knew exactly what he was. They knew he was a terrorist. They knew he wanted to kill British people. And yet they still handed him to this kindly foster parents. And the foster parents are now suing the council for this. And I think this is what the British public want to hear about. This report comes from Breitbart. The white foster parents of the Parsons Green bomber are to sue the local authority for placing the Iraqi teen in their care without telling them he had been recruited and trained to kill by ISIS. Imagine that. The authorities knew he was an ISIS soldier and they placed him with foster parents. Pensioners Penny and Ron Jones are to sue Surrey County Council for negligence, claiming it had withheld vital information about the dangers posed by Ahmed Hassan, the child refugee who went on to injure 51 people when he left an explosive device on a train which detonated at Parsons Green London Underground Station on September 15th, 2017. Hassan, who claimed to be 15 years old when he travelled illegally to Britain from a Paris migrant camp in 2015, had been placed in the care of the elderly couple, though the local council failed to tell them that he had informed the Home Office's immigration centre about his links to the terror group. Instead, authorities sold him to the couple as merely a troubled young person. A lawyer representing Mr. and Mrs. Jones told the Telegraph, Surrey County Council owed Penny and Ron a duty to disclose key information about the danger Ahmed posed and to ensure any information given was accurate before asking them to invite him into their home. Instead, he was presented merely as a troubled young person. This is a clear failing by the council and gives rise to claims of negligence under the Human Rights Act 1998. I think this is really shocking. I mean, they're daft people anyway for accepting a non-white and fostering him when they could have been fostering white kids. So they're silly in the first place. But the fact that this refugee that was probably lying about his age as well had actually said, I want to kill British people, I am an ISIS soldier, and they still brought him into the country and handed him over to this kindly couple. Now, the knock-on effect of this is that the couple will probably never foster children ever again. And there are a lot of children out there that need good foster parents. And this, you know, this is a horrific abuse of the system. And this isn't in the mainstream news at all. And it really should be, because this is the sort of thing that's going on. This is what people want to know about. They don't want to know about Shamima Begum's baby in Syria. They want to know about the threats that the so-called refugee crisis poses to the British people. What do you think about this, Max? This happened in Surrey.
Yeah, I think, you know, the comments you made are absolutely correct. And I don't think we really need to necessarily focus on this particular incident other than to say that it reflects upon the mentality and the principles that are applied by the immigration service at large. You know, we've got a system where the British public are constantly being reassured by government, or not being reassured, but the government are offering reassurance to us, which seems sort of paper thin. But yeah, we're constantly having this reassurance that, oh yes, people who come into the country who are, you know, either migrants or who are fleeing persecution and what have you, and we're being reassured that these people have been properly vetted and that they've been that they've been filtered to filter out anybody who could be harmful to our country, etc. And this particular case shows very glaringly that not only are they not filtering people out, but they're actually covering up for people that they know are actually totally unsuitable as as migrants in this country and as potential applicants for British citizenship. Over the years, you pick up these stories where, for example, there are people working within the immigration service who are who come from an immigrant background themselves. There are situations, stories that we've heard where people employed by to work in the immigration offices have turned out to be illegal immigrants themselves. And, you know, it is literally the sort of fox being left in charge of the hen house, isn't it, as far as immigration is concerned. Cases like this just serve to demonstrate just how woefully lacking any political control over our immigration system is.
Well, there should be an inquiry into this. It shouldn't be a private negligence claim that the couple are having to fork out the money for to take the council to court. There should be a government inquiry into how a child soldier was able to get past immigration controls and was placed with a kindly white foster family. That's the really shocking thing about this, because they should be investigating it and looking and seeing, well, hang on a minute, was there other Pakistanis in the immigration control? Were there Muslims that were involved in placing him with the foster carers? None of that is going to be investigated. There's just going to be this private court case against the council. Solicitor Jocelyn Coburn from Hodge, Jones & Allen said, had the appropriate disclosures been made, Penny and Ron would not have agreed to foster Ahmed and accordingly not have suffered the distress and other difficulties that they have endured. Mrs. Jones, who with her husband had fostered hundreds of children and received MBEs in 2010 for their services to children, told media how Hassan had manipulated his way into her family home after social services told her that he had tried to kill himself and would only be released if he was fostered into a stable home, so we took him in. When Ahmed's trial was going on, I was asked if I knew if he had said he was trained to kill by ISIS, and I said no, we would never have taken him in if we'd known that, Mrs. Jones added. A spokesman for the council said they were defending the claim. Hassan, now claiming to be 19, had made the bomb while the pensioners were on holiday in the seaside resort of Blackpool. After being apprehended by authorities, the Iraqi migrant was not charged with terror offences, however, but with criminal charges of attempted murder. He was later found guilty and sentenced to life with a minimum 34 years imprisonment in 2018. The Old Bailey had heard that the young illegal migrant had been referred to the government's anti-extremism strategy Prevent after he had told his teacher it was his duty to hate Britain because of the country's involvement in the war on terror, and after she had caught a WhatsApp message on his phone reading, "Islamic State has accepted your donation." So he's been quite open about this. He's said that he's part of ISIS. He's donating money to ISIS. He says it's his duty to hate Britain. And the authorities knew he was part of ISIS, and yet they still handed him to this couple that they'd actually been given MBEs. I mean, that means that that's the Order of the British Empire, I think. They've been knighted for their services to children. And even they aren't safe from this. I mean, this must have really woken this couple up to what's actually going on. And we've got none of this in the news. All we hear about in the news all weekend, wall-to-wall coverage, Jemima Beggin's baby has died and how the blood is on the hands of the British government. We've had Save the Children. I've seen them being interviewed on the BBC. We've had Diane Abbott on there, various politicians, and they're all blaming Sajid Javid and saying that he's been bending to populism and he's been listening to the right wing. And yet nobody wants this terrorist sympathiser in Britain. And they're all making excuses for her. They're all saying that she was groomed. I've got some quotes here from some of them. Diane Abbott said, "It is against international law to make someone stateless." She's not stateless. She's part of Bangladeshi. Her father is still in Bangladesh. She has Bangladeshi citizenship. So they didn't make her stateless. So that's false. She continued, "And to leave a vulnerable young woman and an innocent child in a refugee camp where we know infant mortality to be high is morally reprehensible." So what she's saying there, we should bring all the women and children from the Syrian refugee camps into Britain? Is that what she's suggesting? Abbott called for Begum to be given the chance to have her actions fully investigated and, where appropriate, prosecuted, but said that Javid had instead chosen to appease the right-wing press. What does it say about our government on International Women's Day that it should allow hundreds of men to return to the UK from Syria and Iraq under similar circumstances, but strip citizenship from a young woman who was groomed as a minor, she said on Friday. It is clear that society is not past blaming groomed young women for their fate. Well, it's just because they have allowed, 500 male jihadis back from Syria, that doesn't mean that we should start allowing female jihadis back. We should never have allowed the male jihadis to actually come back from Syria. And the fact that she says this girl was groomed, that was when she was 15. She left and went and had three children with a jihadi. She is a jihadi's wife. It's not like she's been brainwashed or anything like that. And it's interesting that she's saying that because this girl was groomed, the decision she makes after that as an adult and years later, Britain is still responsible for. How about all those white girls that were groomed and raped by the Muslim grooming gangs that are now in their 30s and their 40s, dying of heroin overdoses that never would have been addicted to heroin if they hadn't been groomed as minors? You don't see the government saying that we should be taking responsibility for that. Where's Diane Abbott saying we should be taking responsibility for the after effects of all these young white girls that were groomed and raped? She's got no interest in that. All she's interested in is this non-white terrorist in Syria. It's sickening. It's not just her. There's others as well. Conservative MP Philip Lee, he said, "I think we had a moral responsibility to her and indeed to her baby. That is why at the time I was just troubled by the decision. It seemed driven by a sort of populism, not by any principle I recognise." How about the principle of putting the needs of the British people first? The safety of the British people first?
Yeah, I think anybody who goes abroad to join an army of a hostile state to Britain that engages then in attacks and in warfare against British soldiers that are protecting British interests, that person, by their very own actions, forfeits any right to British citizenship. And so Shemima Begin should be considered in that way. The fact that she now wants to come back is just typical of people nowadays who want to shrug off responsibility for the stupid or perhaps wicked things that they've done in their life and always try and blame somebody else for what they've done and not take responsibility. But she has to take responsibility for what she's done. She went away to provide comfort to people who were attacking and shooting British soldiers, and therefore she should suffer the consequences of that. And she became a citizen of the Islamic State when she went over to join the Islamic State. And so the fact that we've removed British citizenship from her doesn't mean that she doesn't have any citizenship. It means that the only citizenship she's got left is that of the Islamic State. The fact that the Islamic State has now been conquered by the surrounding legitimate governments is for her to concern herself with. It's not for us to concern ourselves with the fact that she's made herself stateless. It's for her to wrestle with those consequences and come to terms with them and make the best future for herself that she can. And if the future that she has is a very bleak future, then she's only got herself to blame. As far as her baby is concerned, you're quite right. The baby wasn't born in this country. It was born to a woman who had effectively rejected her British citizenship and who had adopted citizenship of the Islamic State. And so that baby is a baby was a citizen of the Islamic State, and again the blame for that lies precisely with the mother. And I think that there are some other young jihadi brides that have also had British citizenship withdrawn by Sajid Javid, and I think it's to his credit that he has actually withdrawn their citizenship. He's actually acting in a way which is far more protective of British citizenship than a lot of white Home Secretaries have done in the past. And as I say, again, this whole episode, as well as the episode of the terrorists that you were talking about beforehand, really just goes to show the thinking and the mentality and the sort of feeble-mindedness of those people who are supposed to be the guardians of our country, who are supposed to be the guardians of British citizenship, to make sure that only people who are suitable and who justify it and who deserve it should be offered the benefits of British citizenship and should be accorded the benefits of British citizenship. And it brings us to a situation where we have to call into question the validity and the legitimacy of the people who administer our country in such a feeble way. And it calls into question also the mentality and the minds of those people who work in our mass media, that they should concern themselves so much with such an undeserving person, and they should concern themselves so much with other undeserving people who should have received far swifter and far harsher treatment than they have done. And it's no wonder that our country is in the state that it is when we've got people of that ilk in our government. And anybody listening to this broadcast who has yet to make their mind up in terms of their political affiliations, they want to listen carefully to what we have to say and measure what we say against the patently, obviously, as I say, corrupt and feeble arguments that are put forward by those who would govern our country and who are motivated by cultural Marxism, by Marxism generally, and by liberalism. You know, these people are just unfit to govern, and the sooner the British public at large realise that and start voting for nationalist candidates, the better we'll be.
It's the same mentality, isn't it? Exactly the same mentality that we see Diane Abbott and this conservative politician showing here is the same mentality that brought in that child soldier and then placed him with an elderly white couple so he was able to set a bomb off. I mean, you've got a woman here who's married, went out there to marry jihadis, had three children in a war zone, and now wants to come back to Britain. And that is exactly the same as a 15-year-old who said he was 15, who broke into Britain, was found in a Paris refugee camp, who said, I'm a part of ISIS, and they allowed him into Britain and placed him with this white couple. It's the same mentality that is saying we should let in Shemima Begin. Exactly the same mentality that let this other child soldier in. And then you've got, and again, if she chooses to get pregnant in a war zone and produce children in a war zone, it's not Britain's fault when the children die. It's her fault for having them in a war zone. And as you say, Max, she's the responsibility of the Syrian Democratic Forces that liberated that area. And she should be applying for citizenship of Syria, because she was a part of the Islamic State of Syria. That's fallen apart, as you say. So it's the Islamic State that's responsible for her. She's the one that rejected her British citizenship. If she's stateless, then she's the one that made herself stateless, not Sajid Javid. I mean, this is all her own choices. And she's trying to escape from having to be held to account for the choices that she's made and the consequences of the choices that she's made. And the British media are total traitors to the British people by highlighting her case and making out that it's something special. I'm sure there are far more deserving people in that refugee camp than her, with children, people that were held hostage by ISIS, Syrians that were held hostage by ISIS that have had their children die out there in that camp, and we're not told about them. And as far as I'm concerned, they're far more worthy than she is. And it's interesting that it's Diane Abbott again that speaks up for this woman and attacks Sajid Javid. I mean, this woman really hates the British people. I think. And she was in another news story, an absolutely hilarious news story over the weekend, where she's literally fantasizing about being raped by white supremacists. And you just have a listen to this. Diane Abbott has spoken of her fears that she could be murdered or raped by one of the right-wing extremists and social media trolls who bombard her with vile threats. She said she never used to think she was in such danger, but the murder of Labour MP Joe Cox by a far-right extremist in 2016 changed her view. The Shadow Home Secretary said it dawned on her after being told Mrs. Cox's killer had a room bedecked with photos of his victim. It convinced Miss Abbott that someone out there had a room full of images of her and that she could suffer the same fate. I mean, just what is this woman on if she thinks that the people that troll her have images of her in their rooms as if they want to look at pictures of her? I can't imagine anything worse than looking at pictures of Diane Abbott. Nobody wants to rape her. I mean, that's just ludicrous. Statistically, there are no cases of white people raping black women, let alone Diane Abbott. And this woman has got to be so big-headed that she thinks that. I mean, I just cannot believe how deluded she is, and that she's put up there as if she's, as if she is a credible Shadow Home Secretary. And every time she's on the television, she just puts her foot in her mouth. And this comment here was actually given at Women's Day. Her comments appear in Women of Westminster, a new book by Labour MP Rachel Reeves, which also provides details of similar threats made against moderate female MPs by supporters of Jeremy Corbyn. Miss Abbott's concern was disclosed on International Women's Day, 24 hours after Home Secretary Amber Rudd had to apologise for clumsily referring to her as coloured. I mean, what's wrong with referring to her as coloured? I mean, the terminology that we're supposed to refer to them by, I mean, it changes by the week. I mean, it was only a moment ago that we were supposed to call them coloured. Now it's people of colour. It just changes all the time so that they can catch white people out. And all the time she's having these fantasies, thinking that there are white people with pin-ups of Diane Abbott in their room and that they seriously want to rape her. I mean, the woman's, I mean, she's got a screw loose, I think, Max. I really do. What do you think of this when you heard this one?
Well, I just find it difficult to believe that she can think of herself in that way. I just find it difficult to believe that she actually said those words. It's I must admit, I haven't read too much into this particular story, so I'll refer to her allegedly claiming that she's in fear of being raped, because I can't imagine that even somebody as dumb as she is could possibly actually think that she would be somebody's rape fantasy. But the whole thing, as you say, is just utterly ludicrous. I mean, yeah, I can imagine that there is a possibility that somewhere in this country that there are people who might have notions about killing her, but I would imagine that they are very, very few and far between. I can't imagine anybody would seriously go out of their way to do something like that, because she is just such a clown. She's such a non-entity. You know, she's had these episodes on TV where she claims that it's something to do with type 2 diabetes or something, which makes her a bit sort of addle-brained on occasions. But she's had these occasions where she's found it very difficult to perform fairly simple mathematical calculations. Yeah, you just have to laugh at the whole thing, don't you? I mean, certainly, if indeed she does actually fear that somebody is planning to rape her, then that is just utterly ludicrous.
Well, obviously she does get trolled. I think that's truthful. She does get trolled, but quite clearly people don't want to rape her. And the reason why she messes up all the time, it's not diabetes, it's the average IQ of the Negro. That's what it is. I mean, she's from Jamaica. The average IQ is 70, and as Morgoth has pointed out, she would be in the upper tier. She's obviously one of the outliers. She's one of the more intelligent ones. So that would mean that she was 10 points higher. So her IQ is probably about 80. And she's put on the television on panel shows alongside people like Jacob Rees-Mogg with an IQ in 120, 130. That's why she appears dumb, because she's up against white people with a high IQ. And it's the left that have gone and put her in the spotlight like this. They're the ones that have thrust her forward and said, go on, Diane, you can do it. You can be just as good as the whites. And of course, she just makes a clown of herself. She, you know, she is just the joke of Britain. And it's not because people are racist. It's not because people are misogynist. It's because she is incompetent. And because she says delusional things like this. Miss Reeves' book states, previously, Diane Abbott thought that the chance of abusers following through with rape or death threats was slim. Well, yes, and she should have stuck with that. I've always said it'll never happen, she told me. But when Joe Cox was killed, that was really shocking to me because I had to face the fact that it could happen. Miss Reeves describes Miss Abbott's alarm when she met a policeman involved in the probe into the murder of Mrs. Cox, who told her a wall in the killer's home was covered with photos of his victim. Diane thought to herself, I have no doubt that there's someone out there with a whole wall papered with pictures of me. Imagine that. I mean, that is the last thing I would want to see, is a whole wall papered with pictures of Diane Abbott. She's got no idea of how, you know, the words she's saying of how they sound. In a separate interview yesterday, Miss Abbott used the House magazine to call for social media trolls to be stripped of their anonymity. Twitter or Facebook should have your real name or address, she said. I don't think that would change a thing, to be honest. I really don't think that would stop people from criticizing her. And I mean, you can't have it both ways. Just recently, they've been talking about how young people, they get bullied online, people find out where they live, and they have a terrible time of it. Well, if they were all anonymous, that wouldn't happen. They could just change their anonymous name for something else. So one of the main problems that they're talking about today is actually solved by the fact that we have anonymity online. And they should encourage young people to have an anonymous character that they are online, rather than giving people details about them. And yet here, because of this apparent trolling, she's saying that people should be stripped of their anonymity. But I really don't think that would stop people from criticizing her or any of these other politicians at all. I don't think it would do anything.
Well, this is all part of the surveillance culture, isn't it? That we have a situation where Google, it used to be in years gone by that people could surf the net anonymously, but now we've got a situation where Google and similar organisations are constantly trying to force people or manoeuvre people into a situation where they open an online account with that organisation, so that then it then becomes impossible for them to surf the net anonymously, and that they that they'll go onto a website where they're able to make comments, and it will say that you are logged in to Google as, you know, your real name, and so therefore those people are then encouraged to actually use their real name. And you're quite right that in this age of surveillance culture, it makes sense for people to just adopt an alias that they use in order to prevent themselves from being bullied online. And for Diane Abbott to turn around and say that people who are online trolls should have their anonymity removed, and should their names and addresses should be published, etc. You know, that is again quite ludicrous when you consider the damage being done to this country by our elected politicians. The damage is way in excess of any damage that's being done to our society by online trolls, and perhaps MPs ought to have their home addresses published online as well, and therefore suffer the opprobrium of the people amongst whom they live, and be subject to the fear that somebody might come in and knock on their door and remonstrate with them over the stupid and corrupt things that they do when they're governing our country. Now, perhaps that ought to be the case. I don't think we'll have Diane Abbott volunteering to do that, though, because that probably would be too penal for her.
Well, where do they get the connection from as well, that it's online trolls? I mean, this Thomas Mayer that killed Joe Cox, he didn't have a presence online. He wasn't an online troll. He didn't have anything at all to do with the internet. And yet they constantly draw comparisons between online trolls and the killing of Joe Cox. I mean, it had nothing to do with it. The idea that the two things are connected is just, again, it's just something that the media have put out there. It's just a convenient thing for them to link with online trolls, even though it has nothing whatsoever to do with it. And old Diane Abbott gets very excited about it. Anyway, I'm sure we'll have more laughs at Diane Abbott's expense as the year goes on. I've actually got a little bit of positive news here, and it's local news, because a lot of the time we deal with what's happening in the main city centres like London or Birmingham. And this is a bit of local news from Middlesbrough, from Teesside, which is in the north of England. There's about 600,000 people there, so it's not that large. And a mayoral candidate has actually spoken up. A potential Middlesbrough mayoral candidate and the town's MP have become embroiled in a bitter row over the issue of immigration. Businessman and charity leader Andy Preston has written a Facebook post titled "Immigration can bring big benefits and big negatives." So he's been pretty open there. He's saying that there are positives and negatives, but nope, that's still not good enough. They're only allowed to talk about positive things to do with it. Mr. Preston narrowly lost in the 2015 mayoral election and has not ruled out standing again as an independent in this May's ballot. His post referred to concerns raised by residents and business owners in central Middlesbrough about large-scale antisocial behaviour caused by big groups of men and horrific gang violence. But the comments have been strongly criticised by Middlesbrough Labour MP Andy McDonald, who described the post as irresponsible and dangerous. Mr. Preston's post said, "I've been meeting Teesiders who are frustrated about a recent wave of immigration that is causing problems in TS1. Local residents and business owners have shown me examples of large-scale antisocial behaviour caused by big groups of men who hang around street corners day and night. Some people have even described horrific gang violence on their doorstep and the intimidation of residents and workers. Decent Teesiders whose lives are being blighted are angry because politicians and authorities seem unwilling to do anything." Mr. Preston claimed there would be speedy action if the problems were occurring in affluent areas such as Nunthorpe or Yarm, but were being ignored in the poorer locations. He added he was 100% certain that recent and rapid immigration into some parts of central Middlesbrough is causing new problems and a clash of cultures is developing. Mr. Preston said police and council needed a plan to make sure that people assimilate and behave. I mean, that's very, very sensible what he's saying there. And all he's doing is reflecting what the people around him have been telling him. And yet he's been accused of being irresponsible and dangerous by the Labour MP. And, you know, I think we're seeing this all around the country now. It's not nationalists that are talking about these issues. It's just normal people that are talking to the people around them and then putting it on Facebook.
Yeah, I think that the thing that's irresponsible and dangerous is politicians over several decades allowing complete uncontrolled immigration to take place. Not just uncontrolled immigration, but immigration where they connive and where they plot in order to hide the true nature of the people that are letting into the country, in the way that we discussed earlier on in this programme. You know, the fact that somebody who is an ISIS soldier who is committed to ISIS should be allowed to come into this country as an illegal immigrant and should be looked after and fostered in the way that you reported. You know, that is just that's highly irresponsible and dangerous. And as you say, as far as this chap is concerned, he was reporting even-handedly, pointing out what he saw as the benefits of immigration and what he saw as the downside of immigration. And the reaction of the authorities and the reaction of the media in this case, it reflects again the fact that they don't believe that the indigenous people of Britain, the indigenous white people of Britain, should have any ethnic interests of our own, and the mere concept that we could have ethnic interests of our own that differ from the ethnic interests of the immigrants is just inconceivable to these cultural Marxists that currently run, and liberals that currently run our country, and that is, you know, something which is totally iniquitous. You know, we do have particular ethnic interests, and our ethnic interests don't always line up and match the ethnic interests of the people that want to come and live in this country. And we've got a perfect right, in view of the fact that it is our country, we've got a perfect right to express our ethnic interests and to express concern when our ethnic interests are being forgotten and, in many cases, abused and trampled in the mud by the people that are currently running our country.
Yeah, there's a lot of elderly people around that, you know, they're really scratching their heads. They can't believe what's going on around them, the way that the government are just allowing all this to happen and covering up for the people that are carrying out these crimes and trying to silence the people that are speaking about it. I mean, I'm surprised here that there wasn't accusations of hate speech, but the actual response from the Labour MP, that's pretty predictable as well. In response, Mr. MacDonald accused Mr. Preston of using immigration as a cheap and easy way to get publicity. No, he was just reflecting what the people around him, what their worries were. He was voicing their worries, exactly what a politician should be doing, what Mr. MacDonald should be doing. He said, "Andy Preston's comments on immigration in our town are thoroughly irresponsible and dangerous," he said. So what is he saying there? Is he saying it might rile up the foreigners into attacking white people? "To highlight such an important issue as immigration in such a negative way while proposing no solutions or ideas of his own is a cheap and easy way to get publicity, but it shows a total lack of leadership unbecoming of someone who may want to run for public office. Where is the rigorous assessment of the work currently being done by the council? Where is the acknowledgement of the role played by cuts to council budgets and conservative government policy, such as the abolition of the Migration Assistance Fund?" So look at that. He's looking at it completely from the view of foreigners and saying, why isn't he complaining that foreigners aren't being given enough money? That's the cause of it, because the Conservatives did away with the Migration Assistance Fund. He's got no idea of what the general public think about this and thinks that they should just shut up. That's what he's saying, isn't it?
That's what I say. In his mind, the indigenous British people have got no legitimate ethnic interests, so he doesn't even consider them. To him, the idea that we might have legitimate ethnic interests is totally alien and illegitimate, and the only people that can have ethnic interests, legitimate ethnic interests, are the people who want to come and live in our country. And that's the kind of mindset that pervades the whole of the Labour Party and, sadly, the Conservative Party and all of the major mainstream parties.
It's the same with crime. It's the same with the rampant crime wave that we've got. You know, they're not talking about the victims. They're saying, well, we need more youth clubs. It's because there have been cuts to the youth budgets and the inner city areas. They haven't got football parks and they haven't got playgrounds and they haven't got snooker halls and they haven't got youth clubs. And if we don't give them things to do, if we don't spend money on them, they'll just start killing each other. And I, you know, that is such an insult to the white kids that grew up without any of the benefits and the amenities that people have in the inner cities. And yet they don't go around stabbing one another. Everything is all based around what the foreigners want. And nothing at all is based around what white people want. Mr. MacDonald said Mr. Preston had publicly supported the Conservatives in the past. So he's trying to smear him there that he supported the Conservatives. He added, "There are hard-working councillors and council officers who are working in our communities, and that means foreign communities, obviously, every day, tackling the challenges posed by migration, challenges which must be met by different communities working together." What about the challenges faced by the white people that this possible mayor was actually pointing out? What about the gang violence that's happening on their doorsteps? Got no mention about dealing with that. He's just saying that migration poses challenges that have to be handled by the communities. "This is a task made much harder by thoughtless dog whistle messaging from people who don't reside in our town, who just visit and don't understand the issues, but are happy to drive a wedge between communities in Middlesbrough, the wedges are already there. The diversity is a wedge, isn't it?
Yeah, he uses the term communities quite often. When you listen to the leaders of the ethnic minority groups, they refer to my community. And what that actually demonstrates quite clearly is that there is no such thing as a multiracial or multicultural society. What you have when you try to create a multicultural society, or what results from attempts to create a multicultural society, is in reality a series of parallel societies or a series of parallel communities, each one of which has got its own vested interests. And of course, politicians, as I said earlier on, politicians recognise the vested interests that the ethnic minorities have, that they have their own specific ethnic interests, but they don't recognise the ethnic interests of the British people. And that is entirely the problem. And if we want to have a society in which there isn't division, then we have to go back to a society that is no longer multicultural or multiracial. You know, people that are supporters of multiculturalism and multiracialism, they try to create the impression that there is no going back, that we can't return to a situation. But you know, that's not true. You know, we can return to a situation of sanity. We can return to a situation where we have a society that is just for the British people again, but it requires the British people to recognise that they do have legitimate ethnic interests and take no heed of the people who tell them the opposite, and who then decide that they are going to assert their legitimate ethnic interests. And our legitimate ethnic interest is in returning this country back to a country that is for the British people, and for the British people primarily, and potentially for the British people only. Now, our society, our people built this country. Our people made it what it is, and until relatively recently, this was our country for the benefit of our people, and it's. Politicians of both the Labour Party and the Conservative Party, who are in reality traitors to the ethnic interests of the British people, who have denied our legitimate ethnic interests and tried to make our country a multicultural society because that profits globalism. It profits the global industry, and it profits those people who want to create a global state with a single global government. That's what, you know, people have got to realise in this country, that we've got to fight against people with those kind of ideas if we're going to reassert our own ethnic interests and have some sanity in the way in which we're governed in the future.
Diversity means division, doesn't it? It means different divisions. So how can you have unity when you've got diversity? You know, they have their own communities minister. They have a specific minister to look after ethnic minority communities. Where's the minister to look after the ethnic whites, the indigenous whites? Well, we don't count. We don't count. Responding to Mr. McDonald's criticism, Mr. Preston said, "As someone who has tried to help groups across Teesside, regardless of background, I was asked to raise this issue by people who feel ignored and betrayed. I have raised these decent people's issue and tried to be very fair. If professional politicians and some snowflakes aren't happy with me, then that's fine. I will keep sticking up for people, regardless of what abuse politicians and their lackeys send me." And I thought that was great. You know, he's not bending over backwards and apologising. He's saying, no, I'm standing up for these people. They're good people.
That's good.
Yeah, it's what we need to see more from. And, you know, I had a look into this area as well. I've got another news story, just a quick one. I mean, he's talking about the violence that's happening there and the gang issues. But at the schools there, they've got no room left at the schools for the local students either. Immigration was a major factor that led to dozens of children not receiving an offer for a secondary school place, it can be revealed. Middlesbrough Council told parents of more than 100 Year 6 pupils last week that they had not been offered a place at one of the town's schools. The authority said schools were full due to unprecedented demand, but it has now emerged that the demand was a result of a number of factors, and the largest being international new arrivals. Figures seen by the local Democracy Reporting Service reveal that this year the council received 61 more applications for school places than anticipated, and more than half of those, 36, were international new arrivals, effectively more than one extra school class. So all those school kids won't be able to go to school with their friends. They're going to have to go somewhere else. They're going to have to be bused somewhere else so that foreigners can go to their local school. So it's not just the violence, it's the strain that's placed on all the local services, the housing, the health service, everything. There is no upside to immigration.
And again, the fact that the interests of the immigrants of the country, this country, is placed ahead of the interests of the indigenous population. You know, the indigenous population should have been given all of the school spaces, and then if there were any spaces left, then they should have been offered to the immigrants coming into the country, not the other way around. And again, it indicates that the people that are involved in administering the school system are placing the ethnic interests of the immigrants above those of the indigenous people.
We're second-class citizens, aren't we? We're second-class citizens, and foreigners who've only just set foot on this on the soil, they're given preferential treatment to us. And it has to stop. And we need more people like this mayor, this Mr. Preston. We need more Mr. Prestons. So if you're in Teesside, send some support to Mr. Preston over there. All right, Max, thank you very much for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. Don't forget, we do have a Bitcoin wallet and we do require donations to keep the website going. You'll find that in the sidebar. We'll be back next week with more Aryan Britannia for you. And of course, we do hope you all have a great week ahead of you.
Radio Aryan, for an alternative to the anti-white system on RadioAryan.com.